Good morning, and welcome to this hearing of the D.C. Rental Housing Commission. I'm Chief Judge Michael T. Spencer, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Judge Lisa M. Gregory and Judge Rupa Ringa. Today is March 19, 2019, and the time is 11:02 a.m. We're convened in the Commission's hearing room, which is located at 441 4th Street, Northwest, Suite 1140B North in Washington, D.C. We are here pursuant to D.C. Law 6-10, the Rental Housing Act of 1985 as amended. The tenant petition is numbered RHTP 1630855. The case is styled Harry Gorell, Tenant Appellant versus Equity Residential Management and Smith Property Holdings, LP, Housing Providers, Appellees. The Commission notes that there are two parties seated before it and would ask that you identify yourselves for the record, starting with the tenant appellant.
Yes, Harry Gorell.
Thank you. As for the Housing Providers, Appellees.
Good morning, Commissioners. Richard Lux representing the Housing Provider, Appellees.
I would briefly like to explain the Commission's procedures. The Commission's rules are similar to those of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Each side will have 20 minutes to present its case, beginning with the tenant appellant. The tenant appellant may preserve up to 5 minutes of its 20 minutes for rebuttal. Following the presentation of the housing provider's appellee's case, who will have no time for rebuttal. In its discretion, the Commission may allow additional time for argument in the event that we engage in questions that occupy a substantial portion of your time. Please turn off your cell phones and other electronic equipment. Please make sure you speak into the microphone as well. There is one preliminary matter before we begin. We received a motion on November 2nd, 2018 from Mr. Gorell's attorney on record, David G. Wilson, who would like to withdraw his appearance. Are you ready to proceed, per se?
Yes, I am.
Being that you're ready, I'll go ahead and orally grant Mr. Wilson's motion to withdraw his appearance on your behalf. Does either side wish to raise any preliminary matters at this time?
No, Your Honor.
Yep.
Would you like to preserve any time for rebuttal, Mr. Gorell?
Yes, the full 5 minutes, please.
Great. Before you begin your arguments, please know that the Commission finds it fruitful if you spend most of your time discussing two issues. One is the issue of retaliation, and the other is the tenant's ability or lack thereof to question Ms. Durall below at OAH. With that, please go ahead and proceed.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yes.
I understand.
The second one is the issue of whether you were able to question Ms. I think her name is Ms. Durall.
Avis Duvall, yeah.
Yes. And with that, you can go ahead and proceed with your argument.
Okay. I'll try to do that, but you need to give a little bit of background first. And as you know, I'm representing myself. I'm not a lawyer, so I'll just use my own language to explain this. I am resident of 3003 Van Ness, Northwest. I became president of the Tenants Association there. There were about 600 apartments. And over a period of time, I learned that a lot of people were coming to me complaining about extraordinary rent increases with rent demands on official forms of $1,000 or $1,500 or more a month in rent increase demands. I helped well over 100 people fight these rent increases because I know that the maximum rent increase by the Rental Housing Act is 2% plus CPI. Many times, this exceeded those amounts many times over. We were often able to negotiate lower rents, but still exceeded the 2% plus CPI. So frequently, people ended up with a rent increase of 10% or 15% or 20% or 25% over what they were allowed to charge. Because of that, I became active. I reported this to the Attorney General. As you may know, the Attorney General is pressing a case against Equity Residential on this on related grounds having to do with false advertising, but it's about this concessions situation. And I also took on this case myself because I was also subject to the same concessions scam, I would call it, because at one point my rent was significantly higher than the market price because of the way that equity reports rent increase demands on these RAD 8 forms. And what it does is it uses a form that says on one side DHCD, a Department of Community and Housing Development, and on the other side it says Equity Residential. It's confusing to people. So people take that as being a mandate when they get a rent increase form that has a very large number. So like other people, my rent was higher than the market rent. I negotiated a lower rent, which was accepted, but they forced me to sign a lease saying that the rent was actually higher than it was. And we had a lot of go-round about it, and I said, no, we need a market rent. They wanted to keep me. So we did negotiate a market rent, but they forced me to sign a lease that I said at the time, I know that this is false, and I will fight this. And they said that that's tough. I have to sign the lease. And that confirmed what I'd heard from other people. In any case, I eventually had a rent increase notice 2 years later because the following year there was no lease. They didn't ask me for a lease. 2 years later, they asked for a rent increase of $362 a month, which is about 20%, I think, rent increase when the maximum was 3.5%. So that's an extraordinarily large rent increase. And the question of this case is that can rent increase demands in rent-stabilized properties be so high, or does that contradict the meaning of the 2006 law on rent stabilization and the current Rental Housing Act? And I argue that it does. This all comes down to losing my voice this morning. All comes down to the meaning of the words rent and rent charged. The word rent is defined in the law, or has been for a long time, and the term, the words rent charged, until recently were not defined. So in 2006, when the law was changed to abolish rent ceilings.
I'm going
to
interrupt you really quickly. Just in your own interest, we're...
Like, you know this part. Okay.
We know this part.
All right.
Yeah.
So I'll skip over that then.
But what I am interested in really quickly is you... Can you tell us when you said you didn't sign a lease?
Yeah.
When? And which year did you not sign a lease in?
I think it's 2015.
Okay.
April 2015, yeah.
And so you just
I went month to month. It's my right to go month to month. Yeah. It was the following year when they say that they caught an oversight and they wanted me to sign a lease.
Okay.
I do want to make one last thing about the language, and then I'll go to retaliation because I take your point. But what they're saying is that rent charged means a maximum legal rent. That was abolished in 2006. I'm saying that rent charged it means rent that is charged, just the same way that distance traveled means distance that is traveled. Money owed means money that is owed. Hours spent, hours that are spent, words spoken, words that are spoken. This is English. That was really clearly laid out in the law. Shouldn't be surprising to anyone that that was the meaning of the words. So trying to define a maximum legal rent, which is actually a rent ceiling, is obviously illegal. And in this case, the ALJ ruled against me on summary judgment, which I found shocking because no one is going to believe that a rent increase could be $362 under rent control, or that rent charge is a rent ceiling when rent ceilings were abolished. So the issues of retaliation, I'll try to leave some time so you can answer questions, so I'm not sure exactly where you want to go with that, is that I'm very active, as you can see, as head of the Tenants Association. My case was cleaved into two parts because the ALJ granted summary judgment, ignoring my motion for summary judgment, but just on the housing provider's motion for summary judgment on the question of the rent increase. And then the retaliation was separated. And in the case for retaliation, I found it a stunning process. There was very much weighed against me in this case. And the situation that you bring up that I flagged in my case was, for example, that I was not allowed to call Avis Duval, who was the witness, who's the manager of the building, who's the person who's most closely associated with this case, who I have miles and miles of emails with, who I've CC'd on emails with other tenants. She's very closely involved, the person I most deal with. And she is their witness at that hearing, and I was denied the right to question her. I was allowed to cross-examine her in a narrower sense, but to ask the questions I wanted to ask her, I was not allowed.
Can you explain how narrow was the sense that you were allowed to cross?
I'm not expert in, enough to know that.
Well, so you, on one hand, you say you weren't able to ask her the questions that you wanted to ask
yes.
her. You were allowed to cross her in a narrower sense.
Mm. Well,
I need you to elaborate. Like, what does that mean and look like?
You know, it's a long time since okay. I was there. Of course, I'm not an attorney, but I was frequently interrupted to say that that's not part of. What we can talk about.
By the judge?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember do you have any recollection whatsoever? And we can listen to the hearing, too. Do you have any recollection?
I've got a transcript of it. But the thing is that I wanted to talk about the history more broadly. And there were a lot of things that I was just blocked from being able to do.
I'm sorry. The history more broadly, the history regarding your situation or
in retaliation,
about you or just tenants in general.
No, this was the retaliation case. So it was my case. It was the retaliation case.
So you wanted to ask her questions about the history of retaliating against you.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And there was let's see, what was I going to say about it? Oh, there were some things like the ALJ did not allow me to provide evidence that substantiated my charges where the evidence occurred after I filed my tenant petition. So in May or so, they started to charge me additional fees on my rent because we had this disagreement about the rent level. So they were putting on my record that they were submitting to someone these higher charges as if I wasn't paying my rent. At the same time, they had filed, there were posters around the building that said that you can improve your rent credit rating if you pay your rent on time. And people had said to me, well, that sounds like a threat. It means that it's going to hurt your credit rating. So I flagged that to them. I talked to Marcos, who was the leasing agent. I said, stop putting these charges on my account. And then he refused. And I filed my tenant petition in August. And then soon after the tenant petition was filed, I got a note from Equifax and the other one saying that there'd been a ding on my credit record. So the ALJ ruled that out because it occurred after the date of the filing. But I had complained about it in August, and I told them, don't do that. It's going to hurt my record, and they did it anyway. I said it was retaliation.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Ooh. Just so I understand, so what I imagine is there are notices around the building, like for general viewership, right? They're just posted in general locations around the building.
Yes.
So these notices about credit ratings weren't targeted to you. Like, do you have any, like below, did you demonstrate any evidence that, hey, this was targeted toward me, and then I filed, and they retaliated against me?
Well, yes, because we had this email back and forth. I said, I knew about this. This I had put into the record. I'm not sure if it was accepted or not, because the judge blocked out a lot of my information if she didn't like the way it was put in. But this is the poster that was put up. It says, help your credit rating by paying on time, which also means the opposite.
Okay.
In May, I had said, do not put these charges on my account. We have a legal disagreement. And honestly, they continue to do that until today. So I have I consider this retaliation still. Month after month, I'm getting finance charges on my bill. So if they win this case, I get not only the $10,000-something that I have in escrow at L&T Court, then they've got another $2,500 or $2,800 on fees that they're charging to my account month after month, and I take that also as retaliation. So I told them in May of that.
What are the finance charges? Because
they have late fees that they're putting on my account still. Month after month. So at that time, I said, "Don't do this. This is going to hurt my record," and they said, "Tough," and they did it anyway. And then I found out a day or 2 days after I filed that it did hit my credit record. And then the ALJ also ruled out of bounds information that happened in October again. And I went to Avis. I said, Avis, you're hitting my record again. and she said, we'll fix it. So eventually they did, and then it happened again. And then I came back to her again, and she said, oh, it's a computer error or something. But this is going on and on.
And so, hitting your record is hitting, because I read the record, and so the other record, I guess. So hitting your record, are you referring to the late charges, or are you referring to credit reporting?
Well, it's going on my bill. It's going on my bill, but it's also being reported to the credit agencies. So that's how I got the response. Now, in October and later, I didn't hear again from the rating agencies, so I don't know whether they recorded an additional problem.
So what you know for sure is it hit your credit once.
Yes.
And that was supposedly resolved.
Supposedly.
Okay, but it didn't. So when you say after that fact it hits your record again, then you're only talking about the late fees.
Well, that's true, but but it's also that's the mechanism by which my credit rating went down. So they should stop that. It is a threatening move to keep doing that. And in a situation like this, where I'm the main person in this city on this issue, main person, head of the Tenants Association, they should know that they should not be charging me. It's obvious that they shouldn't. So if they have legal sense, they wouldn't be doing it, unless they want to just throw me a brushback pitch. Okay. And that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Mr. Grout, I did want to know whether you believe you've been involved with the Tenant Association for a while.
Yes.
Do you believe or can you cite any evidence of retaliation before you refuse to sign the lease or file your petition? Is there anything that suggests that your involvement with the Tenant Association prior to your filing your petition and signing the lease is retaliatory?
I can't remember any action before then, or it didn't come to mind.
So all of the actions or the activities that you deem to be retaliatory are post you deciding not to sign the lease?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you like more on Avis Duval? Because that's an interesting matter.
If we'll give you a couple of minutes more. Yeah, if you have more.
Well, I'll just say that the way this came about is I was not aware that I had to to subpoena witnesses for this case. I thought this was going to – I'm not a lawyer. I thought it was going to be like small claims court or something. But the last minute I figured that out. So I ran down here to get the forms to fill out or to OAH to subpoena Avis, and I did that the night that it was supposedly due. And I mailed it to her. I went to the office. They left early that day. I sent it to Greenstein, DeLorme, and Lux, emailed it, FedExed it, et cetera. And then the next day, I got a call from Deborah Leagy, who was the attorney at the time for GDL, and she says that she wants to quash the subpoena. Will I withdraw it? And I said, no, I'm not going to withdraw it. So the next morning, I found out later in the records that a motion to quash was submitted at 9:30 a.m., that's Friday morning, before the Monday when the hearing would take place. I didn't receive that in email until 11:30-ish. I'm not looking at the right exactly the right numbers. But and then the judge ruled at 12:45. So I work in a bureaucracy. I work in Congress. I know that nothing moves that fast. So not even the paper getting to the judge's desk would not happen within that time. And so for her to get it and then to send it to me later and then to rule by 12:45 in order to defend a $25 billion company so that I can't have a witness on Monday morning, that's outrageous. And then on Monday morning, on top of that, the first thing she said, bring your case. First thing I said, I asked for a motion for reconsideration. And before I got out the Asian, she said denied. I asked if she would subpoena the witness herself, and she also denied it out of the box. So my entire case was fighting back and forth. I can't introduce this additional documents because I wasn't aware of how strict she was going to be about the documents. But I was trying to introduce documents that were already public because Avis and Equity had those documents. So I was preventing from giving email trails and whatnot.
So what evidence did you deem that Ms. Duval would have brought forward that would have supported your case low on the lower level?
Well, we had our emails back and forth. I have all this this other email about my involvement in these other cases because I was trying to show that I was very active, why they would retaliate against me. I have miles and miles of email where not only am I pushing back to Avis, I'm CCing members of the city council and saying, hey, cut it out, trying to get the city council to pay some attention to this issue. So it was fairly heated at one point. You would come to the conclusion that they must not like this guy because I'm trying to fight for these people. And you would also get a sense for the scope of these activities and how aggressive equity is. But that stuff was blocked out. And even when I had the permission of some of the people on the Tenants Association who then wrote testimonies on my behalf, those were also blocked. So I had to read them. The only thing I could do is read them on the stand and to get those into the record. So I haven't gone back over this history in a while, but there were many times in this hearing where I was prevented from presenting my case.
Thank you.
Yep.
Good morning, Commissioners. Richard Lux representing the housing provider appellees. In light of the Commission's ruling in the Feynman case, I'm not going to spend any time beyond what I've articulated in our brief with respect to that issue, just pointing out that we do think that the decision in Feynman should not apply to this case because of its prospective nature. Moving on, however, to the argument with respect to retaliation and Ms. Duval, notwithstanding Mr. Garal's comments, he has articulated that he is not a lawyer and perhaps he should have sought legal advice. But the proceedings before the Office of Administrative Hearing, as well as before this commission, are governed by certain rules and regulations which dictate the manner in which parties must proceed, and they apply equally to petitioners and respondents, whether they're housing providers or their tenants. What is clear when you read Mr. Garal's brief here is, as I said in my brief, he cites to no instance in the record to support his arguments, no specific evidence that was denied, no specific argument that was denied. He concedes that he was given the right to cross-examine Ms. Duval, but cross-examination is limited to questions regarding the direct examination. Had he then wanted to have Ms. Duval testify beyond that, it was up to him to proceed in the proper manner. But he was given full opportunity, as his own comments reflect, to question Ms. Duval. What is most important here is that the judge made extensive findings of fact and conclusions of law, and as the trier of fact, she had the province to determine whether or not she deemed Mr. Garal, Ms. Duval, either or both, credible with respect to the issues that were presented before her. And the issues that were presented before her were limited to those issues that were raised in the tenant petition. Mr. Garal has also made clear that there were other events that occurred after the tenant petition was filed, but he never sought to amend the tenant petition to address those issues. So the only matters which the administrative law judge could consider were the facts and evidence which were addressed in the tenant petition, as the Court of Appeals has articulated in the Perico case. Without notice to the housing provider of any additional claims, the housing provider was not mandated to respond to those claims. And the lengthy description that the administrative law judge made in this case met the requirements of the D.C. Administrative Procedures Act in terms of addressing the claims that were in the tenant petition. So Mr. Garal was not foreclosed in any manner by the administrative law judge from presenting his case, presenting evidence. The issue of the subpoena, which is a different matter, was clearly addressed by the administrative law judge on the record and in her order for the simple reason that, again, the agency rules dictate timing of subpoenas, manner of service, and so forth, and he didn't meet any of those requirements. That is not something that the judge sitting as the trier of fact or as the ultimate arbiter of the issues is entitled to instruct him on. He has to, whether he agrees or not, he has to educate himself about the proper procedures, just as the housing provider does. And the housing provider followed the rules, filed a motion, and the judge made the proper ruling on that issue. But Mr. Garral was not foreclosed, in our view, from presenting his case in any manner. And clearly, administrative law judge credited Ms. Duval in terms of the fact, which I think Judge Spencer, I think you probably best articulated, that there was no activity or retaliatory motive directed towards Mr. Garral. Their procedures were universal, and regardless of the fact that Mr. Garral considers himself to have been in a different posture because of the presidency of the tenant association, there was absolutely no evidence that their administration of their rent program was modified to direct at Mr. Garral some retaliatory motive or purpose. So I would submit, Your Honors, that the decision of the administrative law judge below should be affirmed.
How do you, if you do, distinguish, back to the issue of the, I guess really a rent demand or rent increase, how do you distinguish this from Fineman? Because it's pretty much the same opinion, almost verbatim, below from Fineman decision.
The only distinction I would make, I don't factually or legally distinguish it. I'm aware, obviously, of the commission's decision in Fineman since it was my case. But the only issue that was not addressed in Fineman, because we did not have the opportunity in that case, because the commission issued its decision, which reversed a decision that was favorable to my client, is the fact that we believe Fineman should be applied prospectively, and that the recent change in the law by the city council further buttresses our argument in that regard, that the interpretation of the law at the time was consistent with 10 years of previous interpretations and practice and administration of the Rental Housing Act, and that the commission's ruling in Fineman was the first time that there was an articulation of a change in direction with respect to the interpretation of the law.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to clarify that last point. They were breaking the law for well over 10 years prior to the Fineman decision, and they knew it. It was part of a strategy. It was a legal strategy, I think, from Greenstein, DeLorme, and Lux, and they made millions of dollars doing this. So it was not that the courts had decided that this was the proper thing to do. It's just nobody caught them. The deck is stacked against tenants in this situation because under the Rental Housing Act, matters pertaining to the Rental Housing Code are forced to administrative court because we can't file class actions. There's not that much money in it, so it ends up that people like me represent themselves against people like Mr. Lux, corporate attorney. And the judge in this case has latitude by a case, I think, Padu, which says that pro se litigants should have latitude in matters of subpoenas and other things. So it's not up to me to be a lawyer just to present my case. There was no reason for her to block out this information or to prevent someone who is their witness from appearing on that day. She's already going to be in the room. That's a very aggressive move by the ALJ in this case. Is this part of my last 5 minutes?
It sure is.
I'm going to go really fast. The question about Fineman is that Gabe Fineman's decision is based on law. Looking back at the case going back to 2006, I think it was very extremely well researched and argued. I was very impressed by that. But the law was not changed for Gabe Fineman. So whatever ruled in Gabe Fineman should go going forward. And Gabe Fineman's, that ruling says rent is rent. Rent is not a maximum legal rent. Rent is the amount you pay. Rent charged is rent that is charged. So we're done as far as I'm concerned at that point. The question they're going to raise is about prospectively we passed a law in the city council that says that let's make rent charged a term because it's being abused. Let's clarify that rent charged means the same as rent that is charged.
I'm going to interject really quickly. Yep. and I guess it's for both parties here, the way we see the rent charge, I don't know if it's called Rent Charge Clarification Act or whatever the name of it is, is it codifies Fineman. That's the way we see it. And so, so you could move on past that point.
I don't have to say
point.
That anymore. Yes. Okay, I made my point. In that case, let me use my 5 minutes to make one more point.
This 5 minutes isn't infinite. Like, it actually is probably down to 3 minutes at this point.
Well, I want to say, they will say that, that this was not willful. I have all this over a period of time, over 2,000 pages of FOIA information that shows that this was a willful way of circumventing the rent control law. But on top of that, I recently FOIA'd information that shows that in this period after the Fineman decision, they continue to file rents as this very high rent ceiling. So if there's any doubt that they willfully broke the law, which of course is the point that I want to make, because not only do I want to get my $10,000 back from the L&T court, I want triple damages because they willfully went after me. And they did it willfully because they continue to do it. So even after the Fineman decision, clear as a bell, they continue to do it for the last year. And you can ask them to deny that, but that's the case. They're basically ignoring your decision. So with that said, do you have other questions? Because I'm happy to answer anything.
No more questions. Thank you both for your advocacy. And, you know, we know this is a very contentious issue. In some ways, arguably one of the most contentious issues in our city. That is, it's no secret to us. And so we do understand both sides of the argument, and we understand the point. I'll tell you, you know, for the housing provider's perspective, we understand why you wouldn't think 5 minutes is a good idea and why you want to fight for your tenants, for your clients. And from tenants' perspectives, we understand why they want to hold on to Fineman, so we get it. We will issue a decision in writing and send it to both parties. It is 11:34 a.m., and this hearing is hereby adjourned. Thank you both.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.